Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Burlington, Vermont. Welcome to the show, Gabriel Lajeunesse.
Hey, Victor. Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Well, great to have you here. Now, you are based in Burlington, and it's a very interesting market. It's a market that I know actually extremely well and love to hear more about what you're doing. But maybe before we do that, perhaps give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. You know, I love serving as a financial advisor at UBS Financial Services. I love working with clients and helping them with their various business goals. You know, it's maybe in my blood. My dad was a home builder and my brother's a home builder. So I sort of grew up around that, and watching clients achieve, you know, their commercial real estate projects as they come to bear, whether they're in a growth mode or trying to exit. It's just, it's so amazing, right? To be some part of that. Obviously, people are working really hard to do what they do, but I just love helping them, you know, whatever those goals are that they have, helping them realize that. You know, before I got into financial services, I had some service and as an officer in the U.S. Air Force, where I did international affairs, and just the time of that, you know, some time in at the Pentagon in D.C., I fell into working on a lot of international and economic policy issues, how they're impacting defense priorities, you know, during the Bush Obama years. And I've just continued to stay involved in, you know, economic development issues, you know, ever since. So just love what I do. Love the people I get to work with.
I love it. Well, the Burlington market's a very interesting one. It's probably considered a secondary or tertiary market, at least on a national level, although it's probably one of the largest markets in Vermont itself. Where do you see the opportunity? There's certainly some economic anchors. There's, you know, IBM has a major presence there, as they have had for many years. Where do you see the growth story?
Yeah, you know, thanks for the question. And really, I think as I, you know, look at people that I'm working with, it's all across the East of the United States. And I think, you know, when you look at the real estate market just generally, you know, there's a lot of concern that exists out there, you know, with banks and lending environment and interest rates and things. But there are just tremendous opportunities, you know, when you look at, and, you know, certainly in Burlington, but all across the East Coast, I think there is pressure for multifamily housing. You know, that's a spot where, you know, a couple million units short, at least here in the United States. And there have been a lot of people talking about supply coming online in some of the cities, you know, maybe if they're being overbuilt or not. But, you know, when you look at demographics, they're all going to be absorbed. So that's a spot. You know, even in office, which certainly there's some challenges there, when you look at the Class A ultra lux sort of space, even in San Francisco, those things are fully booked out, right? So not all office is the same. But in the industrial space, you know, even though there's been things that have been coming online, when we look at the numbers of inventory that's being taken down, vacancy rates and whatnot, very, very healthy place to be in industrial. And then what we haven't spent a lot of time talk about, you think a few years back, people talk about the death of retail, you know, not so much, right? I mean, you look at particularly grocery anchored retail. I mean, nobody's building any of this, no vacancy, massive demand. All you have to do is drive by any of the, you know, parking lots and just see, you know, all the activity that's going on there. And so there are many, many bright spots. People talk commercial real estate, sometimes this broad brush, like it's all this vacant office space, and it's not. It's much, much broader than that. So any of those areas, you know, we would say are, you know, just really great places to be.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that we're seeing as developers ourselves is that a lot of investors right now are being very cautious. There are many sitting on the sidelines. The narrative often is, boy, you know, I can get 5% in treasuries where I'm taking no risk. Why would I take any risk at all on anything that's real estate related today? Why don't I just wait? What have you been hearing from your clients?
You know, so just being very, very general, I mean, I think what you just said, I mean, this is certainly on people's minds, right? You know, where yields are at and what safe money can do and what's the risk premium and what am I interested in being involved with? I you know, I think, you know, real estate is an alternative class of investment. I think it, you know, it has a particular space, you know, that reacts a little bit differently than regular, you know, market performance. So there's a reason that somebody may want to have some of that asset class. But I expect that most of your listeners are really in the business of real estate, right? And they really, you know, are very engaged. And most real estate folks, if you look at, you know, just the weighting of their portfolios, they're going to be very, very heavily in real estate. And so for people that are trying to determine where they need to be and when the right opportunities are, I mean, we would just go through and look at some of the fundamentals. We definitely are in an environment where lending will be tighter than it has been in the past, right? It's probably going to be more expensive. Underwriting is going to be more challenging. And so as people are looking at deals, does it make sense? As you say, if you can get pretty decent return in some fairly risk-free type investments, what is the risk premium? Why would they get involved in some of these projects? But again, when you look at some of these bright spots and you say, boy, with all the fundamentals, they were good projects a year ago or 2 years ago. And with the noise in the market, if you can get these at a 20 to 25% discount, which is what we're seeing today, you know, and you certainly could see even bigger discounts into the future. If the fundamentals were good a year ago, why aren't they still good, you know, at a 20 or 25% discount? So we look at that and just say, there's plenty of opportunities to come. You know, certainly there'll be, banks will have to do some workouts. You know, some of the assets they have on books probably need to be written down to true values, which again, could be something like 25% from, you know, where they're at the peak. But, you know, there's a lot of great opportunities. It's going to be case by case, right? Every individual situation is different in terms of where you want to, what plays you want to get involved with. But there are good opportunities that exist now and into the future. I think we'll see even more of those.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And we're starting to see deal flow across our desk as well. We haven't executed on anything ourselves, at least nothing new, because our plate's pretty full. But we are definitely starting to see the beginnings of opportunities come to the forefront. And I believe that there's going to be a lot more of that in the coming weeks and months. As interest rates are continuing to rise, the yield on the 10-year treasury is up almost 100 basis points in the last 45 days. So that's obviously going to impact the cost of capital for permanent financing, make it that much more difficult for folks that happen to have the misfortune of being stuck in bridge financing today. I think that's just going to create more opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it's the number that everybody's been bantering around, $1.5 trillion in loans that are going to mature in the next 2 years. I mean, that's a challenge. Obviously, if you've got one of those loans coming due, that's a challenge, right? And thinking about how you're going to structure your deal moving forward, or whether you're going to walk away, but it's also, you know, opportunities. And we have demographic things too. I mean, and when you just look at aging populations, you know, a lot of the smaller and regional holders are at a place where there's a natural transition that would happen anyway. And it's happening in a moment where does it make sense for them to continue to stick around? And so again, for people that are coming up and are buyers, I mean, there are lots of opportunities. And I think in any deal, right, but certainly in this moment in time, being patient and really looking at fundamentals and seeing how something fits into your overall scheme of things. I mean, it pays to be patient right now, I think. So your approach is probably, you know, very sound, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So where would you say, from what you're seeing in terms of deal flow, where would you say the bright spots are? Can you give me some quasi-specific examples in terms of, you know, submarkets or assets that you're seeing as coming on the market that have caught your attention?
You really have to look market by market, and every MSA is somewhat, you know, different. And I think, you know, when you look at the data points with regard, let's say multifamily, for example, you know, there's certainly been plenty of news about, you know, say Houston or Phoenix, you know, potentially being overbuilt. Right. And I think those are things where, you know, people need to take a look. But our analysis would suggest that with the demographics being where they're at, that inventory will get taken down. Does that mean that things are going to be flat or maybe even be some rent decreases over time? Certainly. But, you know, when you look at other MSAs where there are, you know, you can look and there are just tens of thousands of units short for what's needed. And, you know, you look at some of those things and I think it's exciting to see people who are, you know, in the process of entitlement, because there's not much of that happening. All you have to do is look at the data on building permits and see where we are today from where we were a couple years ago. And you just can recognize whoever's putting, you know how long it takes to do that, right? I mean, if it's going to take you 18 to 24 months to get something entitled, people who are working on some of those things right now, if you're in that particular MSA where there's a lot of demand, and again, no, who's building retail space and who's building industrial space? There are tremendous opportunities. Again, I think it depends on your market. It's important to know your market, but I think all of those are areas. Again, looking up and down the East Coast, you know, you look at building permits, and it's mostly the Sun Belt, right? I mean, that's where a lot of money is shifting that way. A lot of population is shifting that way. I, being from New England, I'm fairly convinced that there's going to be always a significant demand in Boston. There's always going to be a significant demand in, you know, Burlington, in Portland, you know, in Montreal. These places are going to exist, but we have to recognize the demographic shift. If you look at like K-12 numbers in enrollments over the last decade, there's been a migration, right, that's happened to warmer climates. And so you see some of that stuff. But, you know, there's plenty of opportunity out there all the time, I think.
Yeah, there's no question. In fact, I mean, you mentioned Houston in particular. One of the things that we've seen in the Houston market, apart from the fact that it might be a little bit oversupplied, is that in that market in particular, many properties have been hit with insurance increases ranging between 500% and 700%. And that's hard for any project to sustain. How that's going to shake out, Houston's a huge universe. It's, you know, 650,000 apartment units in that market alone. And they're all dealing with that to some degree. So it's something that's, is everyone just going to leave Houston because it's too high risk? I don't believe it. So, but yet it's putting a lot of projects upside down in that market. So there are definitely things that are happening. How they will get repriced in order for things to work again financially, I don't know, because we're in an interesting transition period where we don't know where the end game is exactly going to shake out.
This is always the way it is, right? Like nobody really knows. I mean, you know, we do look across and say, hey, look, I mean, there's a lot of folks that'll say a lot of things and really get people nervous and get people excited. When you look at it, let's just focus on office for a second, because that's really, you know, it's like if you got 40% vacancies, that's the concern. You know, the doom loop that you hear in New York City and San Francisco. I mean, the reality, when you look at our banking system, office represents 1-2% of large bank loans. And even for the small regional banks, you know, 2-4%. So the idea that we're going to be into a 2008 scenario, I mean, when you look at capital ratios, we're 30-40% higher than we were in the global financial crisis. So we don't see that sort of thing happening. But definitely, you know, no, none of us have a crystal ball, right? So the opportunity, I think, that's where knowing your local market really makes a difference, right? Really understanding what's happening in your space and being an expert in that space, that's going to make the difference between really good plays and things that were questionable, right?
Absolutely. And the lesson for us, for example, if I look at the wake of the 08 crisis, we started building in Philadelphia when we were really at the bottom of the market, 2011, 2012. We had almost 4 or 5 years of pent-up demand with almost no new product entering the market. And so we were almost alone in the market at that point as one of a handful of folks that were developing brand new product. And so that product got snapped up because there was just so much pent-up demand. And we could see a repeat of that in certain sectors.
Yeah, what a great play that was. And there's definitely going to be people positioned like that now, right? I mean, again, I think these people who are continuing to work on entitlements, it's a great thing.
Love it. Well, Gabriel, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Yep. So Gabriel Lajan asks, there's not many of us, I don't think, out there. So if you, I love to network. So LinkedIn or Twitter or X, you know, these days, that's the place to find me, and love to connect. And love to, you know, meet people in real life as well as online. So thanks so much, Victor, for having me on today. Really appreciate it.
Fantastic. Well, love the conversation. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Gabriel Lajeunesse on LinkedIn or on Twitter. The links will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.